been a hot second. I got my Chicago accent in full flex for all of you guys. But it has been a moment since I've done a solo episode. And I thought it would be good just to do almost like a fireside chat, talk to you guys about what's going on and some changes that have happened on my side of things that are actually really exciting and have been very eye-opening for me. As you may or may not know, in December 2020, I ended up leaving my corporate career, and it was the best decision that I ever made. I really had a buffer to leave, in full transparency. So in August of 2020, I was working for a Fortune 500 company as a VP of marketing, and they had a opportunity for people to raise their hands for voluntary severance. So basically, instead of them going through and laying off people, they wanted to see which people wanted to go before they laid off people. So I was at the point where I'd started this podcast. I had also started working in my business just to see what it would feel like and how I could build it up. And I got to a point where I wanted to raise my hand and leave. And I could not wait to leave because I worked in financial services. I worked at a bank. And let me tell you guys, not my cup of tea, not bad, because I met some really incredible people there. My boss is amazing. I had amazing friends that I met as a result, but man, it was just soul sucking. If you've worked in a corporate career, you've worked in a corporate job, maybe you felt that way, and maybe that's why you decided to end up leaving, or maybe that's why you're thinking about leaving, is because you have these thoughts of just not liking where you're at. And that's where I was. So I decided to raise my hand and put my name in the hat for voluntary severance. What was great about it is that I worked in that job until December 2020, and then I left and I had 6 months paid leave, paid healthcare, which was incredible for me because it helped me establish my marketing business, which is called Once and More. So started that in December 2020. And in the corporate world, if you're familiar with working for bigger companies, there is a lot of people are very siloed. So it's very typical that someone in marketing is not doing all of the marketing. They're really, really segmented into focusing in certain areas. So for example, you'll have a social media person or a social media team. You'll have an email marketing team, email person, SEO person, right? So everything is split out based on what team you work on. And so if you want to learn things, what I found in the corporate world is it's really hard to learn what you want to learn. And usually they have these like gatekeepers that are watching certain areas and making sure that, you know, someone can't just claim that they're going to start doing SEO unless they run it by the SEO person or the SEO team. So it creates it's frustrating if you want to learn those things, but it also for a big company is in the best interest of the company so that someone isn't going rogue and doing something that they're not supposed to be doing. For me, as someone that's really curious and likes learning new things, this was just a nightmare for me. Because I remember going to meet with the SEO person and being like, what do I need to know? Teach me everything. I feel like I don't know anything about SEO, and an SEO search engine optimization for those of you who are not familiar. So basically ranking in Google searches, showing up when people search for things. I really wanted to learn the science behind it, but I just didn't have the opportunity to learn it because I had to go through this segmented siloed team to learn SEO. And this was just frustrating for me. It kind of angered me because I remember sitting down with the SEO person and walking through one of the tools that they were using and just being like, this feels like not a great tool. Like I'm wondering if there's something that is better out there. Turns out the tool that this SEO person was using, he used to work for this company. So he was trying to bring this SEO tool into the company kind of like under the gun. And because no one knew any better and because he was the SEO person, that's just the tool that they ended up using. So I felt very curious and also kind of like, okay, if this is it, if this is as far as I'm going to get with SEO is I have to go through this person that's gatekeeping things, like how can I learn these things for myself? And I started my career in social media. So I was a community manager for Walgreens. I ended up leaving that to go work at an advertising agency called Razorfish as a social strategist. So my career really started in social media, which is amazing because I was right on the cusp of it when companies were just starting to create positions for social media. But that had been my bread and butter for so long. And I'm sure some of you guys who maybe aren't as familiar with marketing, it feels really easy to just equate marketing to social media because it takes up so much time now. Like social media is everything to a lot of brands, but marketing really goes beyond that. There are so many things that marketing can do for a brand that isn't just social media. So I started my career in social media, but it's really not something that I am passionate about working on and doing anymore. And so when I launched my brand, my Once and More marketing consulting firm earlier this year, I really was just looking to get clients in the door that I could help. And I knew that I understood social media. So it was very easy for me to teach clients about social media, to help clients with social media. But one thing that always, or multiple things that always intrigued me were the other parts of marketing that were kind of untapped. So like SEO, where I couldn't really break into it because I was always blocked by this guy in the corporate world. I was like, I really want to learn these things for myself. SEO was one thing. Email marketing was another thing. Paid ads, I had started working on when I was at Razorfish. I actually worked on Nike running some of their paid campaigns, and I loved learning about paid. So I knew that I had that interest. So I really wanted to venture beyond social media and actually start doing things that were more e-commerce focused, like actually got clients closer to conversions than social media. Sometimes for me, social media especially, I feel so far away from the purchase. And that's what I wanted to talk to you guys about today is through everything that I've gone through in my career, I love the unknown and I love learning things that I feel like are not as easy to understand to some people. And my marketing curiosities have really spanned beyond social media into more of the e-commerce space, especially since I launched Once and More. I started realizing that social media started to feel very turnkey. And I know for entrepreneurs who are listening, who are just one person, they'd probably argue this all day long because it doesn't feel turnkey. It feels like a total time suck and the algorithms are always changing. And I get that. But for the most part, you know what you need to do to show up and get things done. I feel like, especially if you're in marketing, but there is this other side of business that is really unknown. This SEO, paid email marketing, conversion rate optimization, so many things that I feel like a lot of people just don't get, don't understand, and they just want to figure out. And so slowly but surely, I've started to pivot my business away from social media. I mean, I offered other things, but social media was always part of the package. And I'm really starting to look at what are things that I can do to help e-commerce businesses grow. And I felt like to make this pivot for myself, I didn't have experience in these things. And so I wanted to look credible, but I didn't know how to look credible. So what I ended up doing was in June or July, I can't remember which, this like timeline's all blurring together at this point, but I decided to start and launch my own e-commerce business. And for a lot of people, they probably think I'm crazy. I think I'm crazy sometimes because I don't have time for anything, but I felt so compelled to do it because I wanted to learn how to be better with e-commerce and how I could test and learn things in my own e-commerce business to then apply to my clients' businesses. And I want to say to you guys, I didn't start this e-commerce business with a product that I felt really passionate about, that I knew a lot about. I started building something out in a segment of a category. I'm not going to go into details just because I don't like to talk about it that much and I'm still learning myself, but I wanted to build out a product suite basically. And I worked with manufacturers and suppliers to get the products in a place where I felt like they all fit together and they looked really good. And I trusted the suppliers, manufacturers. I built this kind of like segment for myself. And I don't know anything about this business. Like I literally don't. I've tried learning more. And as I've started to write blog content, I am learning how it works and how I can speak as a more educated person on it. But I really did it because I wanted to figure out the marketing aspect of it. And what's been so incredible to me is I've learned so much through the process of just starting this side brand to the point where I actually think this side brand could end up being my primary source of income in a year, which is amazing to me, like mind blowing to me. But I really started it to put into practice some of the marketing tenets, right? I wanted to use this episode. I know I'm already 10 minutes in. It just flows when I'm talking sometimes. It's so weird. I would have never said that when I first started this podcast. Man, I just feel like I'm really talking to my computer at this point, but I feel like I'm talking to so many people, and it's fun to know how I can provide value to you guys, you know, who are on the other side of things. But I wanted to use this episode to talk through some key learnings that I've put into practice through building this e-commerce brand from a marketing perspective that have really, really, really helped me. And I want to walk through some tactics that I've tested out that I actually think could be really valuable to those of you that are listening. And it doesn't even necessarily need to be e-commerce focused. Like if you're a service provider, you're a coach, or, you know, you offer something that's maybe not as tangible, I still think these are really helpful tactics. But here's the deal. The e-commerce brand that I'm running, there is no product less than, I think, $75 that I am selling. So everything is very expensive, really. It's not as much of a quick decision for someone to make. So some of these things that I'm going to talk about, I think can be applicable to any brand, but it's especially important to note that what I'm selling is really a considered purchase. And what a considered purchase means is just that it takes a higher amount of frequency and getting in front of someone for them to really think through whether or not they're going to make the purchase. And I had someone that had purchased $3,400 of product, which is amazing. Very excited about that. But I had talked to him over the course of a month through the different products and what might be valuable or worthwhile for him. You can imagine a month of time is a long time to have someone go through this funnel. And what I learned is he didn't primarily use email to connect with me. He used my live chat. And if my live chat hadn't been available to him, then I don't think I would have made this big of a sale. So actually, you know what? The two other people that have purchased so far also use live chat. So I've had pretty much a 100% success rate because of my live chat. And the tool that I use on my e-commerce website is called Tidio. It's T-I-D-I-O. And the reason why I used it is because it's actually relatively cheap compared to other options. So if you're familiar with like a Zendesk or an Intercom, a Gorgeous is one that a lot of Shopify brands use. I feel like it's always a money suck, and I just didn't want to go down that path with paying $60 a month for Gorgeous. Tidio is, I think it's like $18 a month. I am obsessed with it. And the reason why I love it is because you can actually create custom flows. So one thing that I love is that you can set up a pop-up notification in the little corner that greets someone when they first come to your website. But I also love that they have a return person flow, return user flow, so that when someone comes back to your website, if they're a returning visitor, you can create custom messaging for them. I also love that you don't have to be near your computer. You can set up a lot of different automations. So going back to the episode that we had with Natasha, for those of you that listened to that episode, it really is so eye-opening to see where chatbots are going. And this chatbot that I've used has earned me thousands of dollars for this e-commerce brand. So I highly recommend it. You can set up custom flows. So, and you can also set up away messages. So between the flows and the away messages, you know, you don't have to be glued to your computer. Tidio in particular has a app that you can use so that you can make sure that you never miss a message from someone who's visiting your site if they have questions, which is great. But it has been instrumental for me. And it's actually so much fun too, because if you use this tool, you go into the tool, you can see when someone is on your website. It'll show you like a live view, which is so much fun. So I highly recommend that. That has helped me so much in growing sales, connecting with customers, and being a face to the brand. Like I have my photo there, so people know that they're talking to a real human when they initiate the live chat. So that's been super valuable, super instrumental. Another marketing, I want to say tactic, but to me it feels so much bigger than that. Another marketing tactic slash app, because it's an app in Shopify, is one that I've used called Daily Karma. And it's dailykarma.com. And here is why I love it. If you have ever wanted to give back as a brand, but you feel like you're having a tough time messaging it, or you just want to find an easier way to have the experience happen on your website, I love Daily Karma because it sets up a little widget on your product pages, or you can even do it on your homepage, that allows people to add a donation to either a charity that they've set up or that they like, that they donate to, or one that you've designated. And there's multiple different ways that this can come to life. So you can have people choose what dollar amount they want to donate, or you can have it so that it can just say, hey, 10% of your purchase today is going to go toward a donation. It's just such a nice touch. It makes being a charitable organization so much more streamlined. I think think customers really find it valuable to know that their purchase is giving back. And Daily Karma even notes on their website that it has been proven to increase conversions and actually help with the add to cart volume because people feel like they're able to give back more, which is amazing. So I highly recommend Daily Karma if you're looking to do some kind of like charitable aspect on your website. Zooming out a little bit more, one thing that I really want to stress that I've learned with other clients, and I'm continually learning myself, because I am a new brand that most people have never heard of in their life, I have a lot of waiting to do. And that doesn't mean that's like passive waiting. That just means that it's going to take a second for my brand to become more widely recognized and known. And I think for a lot of small business owners, it's very easy, especially as a founder of your brand, it's very easy to get sucked into the fact that you might think, you know, well, people have seen me so many times, or they're probably exhausted seeing me, or, you know, I don't want to bug people too much. The truth of the matter is, when you look at the stats of frequency and how often it takes someone seeing your brand to actually make a purchase, you have to know that if you think you're being annoying to a consumer, it's probably clicking with them because it takes so many times for someone to be exposed to your brand before they decide to take action on your brand. So you need to understand that I use the analogy of dating all the time. You can't ask a customer to marry you if you haven't even tried flirting with them yet. And that is the truth. You have to learn how to engage with them, flirt with them, date them before you decide to ask them for a conversion, especially if you're a newer brand. Think about when you're shopping for certain brands. If you're not going to a trusted source like an Amazon or a bigger website, then you're really researching the brand that you're buying from because you don't know if you can trust them. You have to learn how to build that trust with your customers. A great way to do that is through testimonials and social proof. So showing off what people have to say about your product, I think that works really, really well. But I think the bigger point that I'm trying to make here is that it's going to take some time for people to recognize your brand and to feel comfortable buying from your brand. And you have to give yourself the space to allow that to happen. I think there's a lot of people who hear about running ads and how beneficial and impactful running ads can be for your business. There is no question that running ads helps you get more reach. And when you have more reach, you have a higher potential to reach potential buyers, right? Because you're naturally reaching more people. The reach factor is huge with paid, but I think what people are not considering or understanding is the fact that you need repeated exposures to get someone to even consider your brand. And you also have to flirt with them a little bit. You have to entice them. You have to intrigue them. You have to pique their curiosity. So something that I've been talking about with a few of my clients, especially when it comes to paid, is you always hear these like e-commerce gurus, Facebook ads gurus talking about running ads that just drive to conversions and really increasing website purchases. And that is the end all be all. And that's the most important thing. Do not get me wrong. That is super important because the whole point is to drive sales, but you're going to waste a ton of money trying to get someone to buy from you instead of just trying to flirt with them. So when I'm talking about flirting, what I mean by that in terms of like an actual execution standpoint is getting them to watch a video, getting them to engage with your brand in some way, some kind of high level awareness, getting them to just click around on your website. That's a huge one. Paid really does help get you that reach, but you have to understand it's going to take some time to get someone to consider your brand. And you have to consider all of the different options and avenues that you have as a marketer for that ultimate purchase to happen, right? Social media helps with that because people might passively see a social media post. Email helps with that because you can lightly remind someone that you exist in their email inbox. That's why gathering emails is such a critical part of your business. So all of those things are really important, but I did want to hit on that when it comes to paid, just that your brand, likely most people have not heard of it. So you have to warm them up a little bit to get them to consider purchasing from your brand. And that really comes to you not only in the marketing, you know, language and voice that you use and the copy that you use, not only in paid when it comes to reaching more people, but also too, one thing that we haven't mentioned yet is your website design. Now, I know if you're an Etsy seller or you sell on a third-party website, website, this might look a little bit different, even though whatever you're selling, there is some clear design, something that resonates as it like design wise with a potential customer, but you don't have control over the Etsy website, right? So what I'm really talking about here is e-commerce websites and how e-commerce websites flow and feel. When you're looking at your Google Analytics, something that is just so easy to see if your website's really resonating with people is how much time are they spending on your website? What is their dwell time? So Google actually has this term called dwell time. Let's say someone finds your website through a Google search and then they come to your website. Google's basically measuring that time from the amount of time they spend on your website to the amount of time they come back to the Google search. So you want to have a strong dwell time, which means that your page is fully optimized and has a lot of content on it that speaks to your customer so that they're pulled in, they're reading, and they're spending a lot of time on site, because to Google, that makes you look like a credible website and you're that much more likely to get a higher ranking. But your homepage design, your homepage copy, how people can view things, like all of that matters so much. And I think a lot of people also think that turning on ads just equals sales. And when I launched this e-commerce brand, what I really noticed is how much the flow of my homepage really started to influence how people were interacting with the content. One thing that I did was I looked at other competitors in my category, and I noticed for this category specifically that all of the pages were like followed the same formula, and they're much bigger brands than mine. So when I say competitors, they're really not direct competitors. They're kind of like aspirational competitors, I guess you could say, because they make millions and millions and millions of dollars a year. So aspirationally, I was looking at them to see, okay, how is their website? How is their homepage formatted? And how is it laid out so that I can almost take that and follow that for my own page? Because they've been around a lot longer than I have. They've clearly tested things, and I'll then, you know, make those modifications, test them myself, look at my analytics and see, okay, is this working? Is this not working? Another tool that I love to use that I will sing the praises of forever that I know has been brought up on previous episodes is Hotjar. So if you use a tool like Hotjar, I think there's one called something orange. I can't remember what it is. But there's a few of these tools out there that exist. And what they do is they actually record your site visitors. So either on desktop, on mobile, they'll record your site visitor session so that you can go back and watch it for yourself and see where people's mouses are hovering, what they're clicking on, if they're reading the content. You guys, it is so eye-opening to watch all of this happen. It is freaking crazy because you just realize, you know, what I realized for me is that people read content a lot more than I think I read content. I had someone spend 25 minutes on my website and they just read all of the product descriptions. So for me, I'm like, well, shit, I gotta write better product descriptions because someone is spending a lot of time reading them and I'm not spending a lot of time writing them. So Hotjar is so eye-opening because you just see, you know, if someone is scrolling through your page really quickly, then what does that tell you? Either they know what they want and they're ready to buy, or you're not convincing them enough. You're not pulling them in enough. So Hotjar is really eye-opening. I do want to even go back to mobile because a lot of websites completely forget about mobile. It's amazing to me in this day and age that we're still even having this conversation, but mobile is so important. If you are not looking at your website design holistically, meaning desktop, mobile, tablet, you need to figure out how to make sure that all of those look fluid so that you're getting someone on mobile who wants to buy from you just as much as someone on desktop. You have to have both of those. It is so important. And you'll be able to see that in your analytics. Whatever tool you use, if you use Shopify Analytics, Google Analytics, it will tell you how much of your traffic is coming from desktop, how much of it is coming from mobile, how much is coming from tablet. You need to know this. And if your website is not perfectly optimized for mobile, you need to find someone who can help you with that because it is critical. And the bounce rate is so high. So someone is going to be so likely to leave your website if your website isn't perfectly optimized. Think about when you're shopping, right? I always think it's good for us to come back and do a gut check of like, if we're shopping, would we want to shop from a website that doesn't have its mobile design built out? No, we'd probably be like, this feels a little sketchy. I'm going to dip. Like, I'm not going to shop from this website. So it's also a part of just looking like you're a pulled together website that means so much. So having your mobile built out is really important. On places like Shopify, websites like Shopify or platform, excuse me, WordPress, Shopify, depending on what page builder or theme that you're using, you should also be able to edit your mobile view so that you don't have to edit everything on your website. I've done this for a few clients now, and I did this this for my e-commerce website, where I simplified the mobile view so that when someone is shopping on mobile, they're not going through the same experience that they're having on desktop. And that's really, really important. If you feel like your website needs a complete refresh, don't overthink trying to find a new theme. A lot of times you can use things called page builders, which can help you create new landing pages for things. So for example, there is a tool called Pagefly. Another one is Shogun. These tools help you build out different views of your website. So let's say you have a product, maybe you sell one product and you really want to promote that product. You want to have a dedicated landing page for that product. You can actually use these tools to design a dedicated landing page without touching the back end of your theme or, you know, the back end of the platform that you're using to sell your product. So that's another really easy way to modify the look and feel of your website without having to redo everything and spend so much money to just do things over again. You don't have to do that. The last thing that I'll touch on that I've learned so much from my e-commerce business is just having email flows set up. Telling you guys, when you have these done, it saves you so much time. It is crazy. The flows that I typically recommend for clients and ones that I've also talked about on my social media channels are a welcome series flow. So when someone decides to buy from you, really when they sign up for your newsletter, you can have an automation set up so that it automatically greets them with an email after they sign up. That's a really nice, just like personalized touch that I appreciate and enjoy. That's the welcome series. Then you might have an abandoned cart flow. Keep in mind that an abandoned cart email will not trigger unless you have that person's email. So if you have a website where someone's not creating an account with you, you are not going to be able to just automatically trigger that email so that you reach them with an abandoned cart flow. They have to have either initiated checkout for that email to really trigger. So keep that in mind. Do I recommend that someone creates an account with your brand every single time or for every single brand? Absolutely not. That's a complete waste of time and money for your business. But just keep in mind that abandoned cart flow isn't going to trigger the way that you might think it does. One thing to solve for that, if your abandoned cart email doesn't trigger, is you can use a chatbot like Tidio, like I talked about earlier, that will actually capture if someone's about to exit the page, and it can show someone a pop-up that says, hey, wait, you know, don't leave yet. Something really thirsty. Tell them something that gets them to want to stick around or end up completing the purchase. So the welcome series, the abandoned cart, and then you can set up a post-purchase flow. So either you can do a welcome series if someone just signs up for your newsletter, or a post-purchase flow, which is like when someone ends up buying from you, what are fun emails that you can customize to them to make them feel really special. Also, as part of the post-purchase flow, if you're a website that has reviews and you want someone to write a review, then that's the perfect opportunity to follow up with a review. So, I feel like I talked about so much. My eyes are going cross-eyed, but I really hope this helped. All of these things that I just talked about, I have leveraged in my e-commerce business, and I have grown and scaled my e-commerce business as a result of these things. And they seem really tactical, and that's because they are really tactical, but sometimes that's all it takes is making slight tweaks and edits and then looking at the analytics and seeing, did that work out for me? Did that not work out for me? Okay, what do I need to tweak to get a different buyer or consumer behavior? And as a business owner, that is your goal. So if you're a service provider, e-commerce business, product-based business, doesn't even matter. You have to get in the habit of creating, testing, analytics. The cycle continues over and over again, especially if you want to increase your numbers. Setting it and forgetting it is not a recipe for success. You have to constantly be optimizing and trying new things to get to the point that you want to be, to really satisfy your goal of being a successful business. So that is it. I'm going to go drink some tea right now. but I hope this was helpful to at least someone out there. I would love to hear from you as always. You know, I always say that to you guys, but you know, let me know if these episodes are helpful, if you feel like you're learning something from them, and if you want to hear more about a specific topic, I am always all ears. The email address, it's hello@thenextbigthingpodcast.com. And we always include it in the show notes, but please use it, abuse it. Seriously, like don't send me spam emails, because I have gotten one. Actually, someone sent me a spam email with just the subject line bacon and that was it. Like, I don't really need those types of emails, but if you have an actual like critique or comment, piece of feedback, I would love to hear it because I just don't want it to show up in the reviews if it's something that I can work on and I can fix. So that's so important to me, your feedback. I am forever indebted to you guys. I love you so much. Thank you for being here. I am grateful for you. I'm grateful for you tuning in and listening, and I will catch you guys in next week's episode.